But first to a story that involves issues of whether our system of laws is completely assured in terms of its sovereignty. This week, a Senate committee hearing is hearing, a committee inquiry, is hearing submissions into a private bill proposed by Green Senator Peter Whish Wilson to exclude something called investor-state dispute settlements, ISDS they're known as, from trade and investment agreements that are being signed up pretty frequently these days. At the moment, trade agreements are increasingly including a clause that gives foreign investors the right to sue governments if the investors' business interests are adversely affected by the policy of the country concerned. Now, Saturday Extra's looked at this before, where Philip Morris Asia, for instance, have objected to the Gillard government's plain packaging laws for cigarettes, and they're using provisions under the free trade agreement we have with Hong Kong. But there are increasing concerns that these ISDS settlements could do considerable damage to the fabric of our democracy. Now, that sounds dramatic, but it was certainly on the mind of our Chief Justice Robert French in an unusually tough speech delivered to a group of judges in Darwin last month. And I think it found a sympathetic hearing from Professor Thomas Vaunce, who's about to join me. He believes that these settlements tip an important balance of power within our democracy away from the people to big corporations. Thomas Vaunce is professor jointly in the College of Law and the College of Medicine, Biology and the Environment at the Australian National University, the ANU, and he's written a submission to the inquiry. So, Thomas, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Welcome, Geraldine. How are you?
I'm very well, and I've just got my wrong, if you'll just forgive me for a moment, I've got a wrong piece of paper in front of me because we were actually planning to go to you second, and I'll just get myself in hand. Now, could we just recap, please, about how these investor-state dispute settlement provisions have come into place?
Well, I guess you could go right back to the 1990s when there was plans for what's called the MIA, or the Multilateral Investor Agreement. This was a large agreement with lots of countries around the world, and it was beaten off by civil society. And essentially what it would have done was allow foreign investors in any country, including a country with established rule of law, to challenge domestic regulation or governance whenever they felt that it impeded their profits, even in a way that they call indirect appropriation. So in a sense, it allowed large foreign corporations to double-guess decisions of the local democracy as to, you know, do we create a carbon price? Do we impose a mining tax? You can't do that because it impedes our investments in your country. So it, in a sense, it allows these corporations to become stakeholders in a democracy without having all the usual obligations and responsibilities of stakeholders in a democracy to vote and to participate in society and so forth. And so that's why it was beaten off. And what's happening now is that we're seeing that through a variety of bilateral investment agreements, BITs, and also through the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, the same provisions are being introduced into established democracies like Australia.
So basically, private investors can bring claims against countries, and this is what we're going to hear about when we talk about to Argentina, ending up overturning legislation passed by the people's representatives in Parliament, really. That's the essence of what we're talking about here?
Well, I guess it would depend on how you use the word overturning. This is what Justice French is talking about. In a technical sense, no. Foreign investors don't overturn in a legal sense. But what happens is that they can challenge those decisions before panels of trade arbitrators on very narrowly focused grounds. Those trade arbitrators can appear in counsel in one case, and then they can appear as judges. In a sense, in another case, they don't have a body of precedent. They don't have to take into account the local legislation or even the constitutional requirements or even the international law requirements that are behind various decisions. They get paid by the hour. They have a stake in perpetuating this system, and they can award billions of dollars of damages. Some of these cases have gone beyond hundreds of millions into billions of dollars of damages. And, of course, once a government has a threat that if it passes legislation, this sort of action may be commenced against it, then at the simple policy development level in the public service, innovations in governance are often shut down. So you have this regulatory chill effect created. So This is why what's happening with the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and the risk that these provisions will be introduced to Australia is such a profound shift in our governance arrangements, and it simply hasn't been debated in our society.
Well, not at all. And in fact, I think Justice French, in his, it was an intriguing, he cited a couple of interesting examples. For instance, Al Jazeera, the media network, brought a case against Egypt, including related to an agreement between Egypt and Qatar in 1999. Al Jazeera claims $150 million compensation based on breach of that agreement by Egypt related to the harassment and imprisonment of its journalists working in that country, you know, which is incredibly pertinent given Peter Grester locked up. So it's sort of going into all sorts of unusual areas, isn't it?
Well, I'll give you some examples from other instances. They've had this investor-state settlement dispute system in place in the North American Free Trade Agreement involving the US, Canada and Mexico for many years. A lot of cases are brought there. When, for example, the Canadian government came up with or was given credible scientific evidence that a particular American chemical company was producing a pesticide that was actually carcinogenic and killing children, they shut down the company. But then the company sued them under investor-state dispute settlement, saying, well, yes, you know, our chemicals are carcinogenic, but you have to compensate us because we invested all this money in your country and you have to pay us billions of dollars. In another case, under what's called the Energy Charter Treaty, when Germany announced after the Fukushima nuclear meltdown that it was going to go nuclear-free, the Swedish Vattenfall Nuclear Power Company sued Germany for the loss of its investments in Germany. So what you're having are countries responding to natural political and democratic movements in the country to move directions of safety or visionary approaches, whatever erupts in the democracy. You're now having these corporate actors then saying, well, yes, you can say that, but actually if you want to go in that direction, that visionary direction of shaping the world to be a better place where people live in harmony and environmental sustainability, you'll have to pay us billions of dollars. And so what you're getting is it's this dead hand of the corporate old guard holding back the chances that humanity might move towards a better future. This is why it's such a big issue, and it hasn't simply been debated enough.
And Thomas, there is an argument that there's only been one claim brought against Australia under these dispute settlements, this being the Philip Morris claim we discussed, though internationally 57 new cases began last year, according to the UN Conference on Trade and Development. So are we over-worrying?
No, we're not over-worrying at all. The reason we haven't had any cases brought against us is that Australia's, although it has participated in some of these bilateral agreements in the past, they've tended to be with countries who have not had a developed rule of law. And by that you mean an established judicial system which is non-corrupt and works according to predictable and certain rules. And when the Americans tried to introduce investor-state dispute settlement in the free trade agreement that they got us to sign in 2004, John Howard, the Liberal Prime Minister, said, no, we're not having investor-state, and he drew a line in the sand and said, this is not something that we should have to cope with because we have in our judicial system a means of adjudicating between businesses which is robust and which protects rights and which protects the interests of both domestic and foreign corporations. And we can't see why we should privilege foreign corporations with a separate set of damages claims over local businesses. So it was fought off. And so what's happened now, though, is that Australia in recent years has signed up to a Korean-Australia free trade agreement that has this investor-state dispute settlement system.
And do you know what's underway with the big China discussions?
Well, that's the big concern. I think a lot of people think that really what the American agenda here is to try and somehow get China into this investor-state dispute so their corporations can protect themselves in China. But, of course, why should we get caught up in all this? And, of course, there's a transatlantic agreement going along as well as the trans-Pacific agreement. So it's a profound shift in sovereignty away from the people towards multilateral corporations without the corresponding requirement of those corporations to participate in democracies in the way that citizens do. And the other thing that needs to be thought through with this is that these investor-state dispute settlement provisions will have a profound effect on the Australian states. Now, our constitution is supposed to be a compact between the federal government in Canberra and the various states, dividing powers up and organising procedures where the people can get in, vote at different levels and have different areas of their social life regulated by different tiers of government. Now, there's no doubt that if these investor-state dispute settlement provisions come in, they're going to impact on healthcare, they're going to impact on education, they're going to impact on mining leases, all sorts of areas where state governments and the people at that level have a very profound stake in what they want to happen. Now, we haven't had a debate about how investor-state is going to interfere with federal-state relations in Australia. That's an important debate that needs to happen, and it hasn't happened either.
Well, I think another area you've highlighted in your submission is regulation of banking and financial sectors. David Murray, of course, is chairing that financial system inquiry right now. Do you know if this is on the table?
Yes, there's been discussions about this. These trade agreements are really opportunities for these companies to put a wish list of changes that they want to see happen in other countries. And deregulation of the financial sector and the capacity for banking interests to move into the Australian market with a lot less regulation than we had before is in their interests in terms of profit. But it's obviously not in our interest as a society, because when we look what happened with the global financial crisis, or you look at some of the European countries which have had their banks failed and then had to bail them out, what's going to be the situation if the banking interests in Australia are primarily organised by multinational companies who are headquartered overseas and who, if we impose regulations in any sort of way that interferes with their profits, are going to challenge us before these panels of trade arbitrators? What's going to happen with our pharmaceutical benefits scheme? The only piece of public policy that has unequivocal democratic legitimacy, because it arose as a result of a constitutional referendum. We've already seen in Canada, for example, the Eli Lilly company, an American pharmaceutical company, is suing the Canadian government under investor-state dispute settlement because it wouldn't grant them a patent over a drug that the Canadian drug regulators didn't think had adequate efficacy. Are we going to see that sort of process working its way through and increasing prices for our drugs in Australia? These are profound questions that really, when you look at the way in which these trade agreements are concluded, there's a big issue about whether or not there's genuine democratic legitimacy. This signing off to an investor-state dispute settlement provision in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement was never debated in the last election. There was no clear mandate to the current government from the Australian people that they were prepared to do this. There was no substantial debate about what impact this was going to have on the prices of medicines, the capacity to get access to hospitals, the way in which education was going to be funded, the way in which we were going to get money back from the mining industry, the way in which we could regulate our businesses. None of this was debated. Now, for a government to then step up and change profoundly the arrangements in Australia, contrary to the decision of a previous Liberal government, this is a major change in Australia.
So where is this going to lead? I mean, is the Green Senator Peter Whish-Wilson, who's pushing for a clause in the Act to remove ISDS in trade and investment agreements, and of course the Senate committee, I think, rules finalises next week, do you think it is going to change the course of events?
Well, no. I think they have to be realistic about this. I mean, Senate inquiries come and go. And look, I support Peter Whish-Wilson, and I'm very glad that it's raising the profile of this, but you know as well as I do that they have these Senate inquiries, they write a report, and the government says, and it files it away. I mean, the government had a big report on the financial sector, 500-page report, all of it saying we needed increased regulation, and then had one dissenting opinion of about 5 pages, which they relied on instead. So are they going to listen to the report of a Senate inquiry, even if it says no? The previous government had a policy of completely withdrawing from investor-state dispute settlement. Now, that's not being followed. What we have seen is the government has already signed up to a Korean-Australia free trade deal that has an investor-state dispute settlement with some what they call carve-outs or safeguards. Now, those carve-outs are so ambiguously worded that every time now a major, if this investor-state dispute settlement comes in, every time any government, whether it's what you might call a progressive government or a conservative government, comes into power in Australia and wants to make a large picture change because it feels it has a democratic mandate, it will have to double guess what multinational companies are going to say about it. And those companies haven't got according to our constitution, a role in our society. And that's what Justice French is concerned about. It's profoundly rewriting the rules of sovereignty in our country.
Well, Thomas Faunce, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Look, it's a pleasure, Geraldine, and let's enjoy the sunshine before this rain starts tomorrow.
I was going to say, before the sky fell in, by the sound of you.
Well, that's right. It's a good symbolic image, isn't it?
Okay.
Of the crisis confronting the Australian people.
Thomas Faunce, Joint Professor at the College of Law and College of Medicine, Biology and Environment at the Australian National University.